Hello, in this podcast, I'm going to take you on a descriptive journey through a x-ray of my heart valve, a butterfly, a V1 World War II buzz bomb, and the Hubble Space Telescope. That sounds an interesting journey, and what I'll do is I'll give a description of each to ground you, and at the end of it, you'll see how they all stick together. To help you along the way, I've posted on the blog page associated with this audio podcast pictures of my valve, a butterfly, a World War II buzz bomb, and the Hubble Space Telescope. So there's interesting things about all these which will stitch all together. So the very first picture is a beautiful x-ray picture of my heart valve. So most people have lots and lots of heart valves. There are four heart valves between four chambers. Or if you go up, there's eight regions of the heart and actually six valves, but you've got to know where to look for them and how to define them. But a valve is essentially a fluid stopper. It allows fluid to travel in one direction, but not in the other. So it is designed in the heart such that the fluid can push past it, but if fluid wants to go the other way, it fills up these sacs and closes off the return. So that's a heart valve. Now, obviously, this heart valve is one, it's quite a beautiful one. It's a mechanical heart valve, and we're going to talk about it. And the x-ray which was taken, these modern x-rays are a fraction of a second, millisecond, a thousandth of a second. So it can actually capture valves in the moment of opening, because most of the time the valve is closed. It opens for a very short time to allow blood to flow through. I'll talk about that a little bit more. But there's an x-ray, which is a light source, x-ray light source. All the soft x-rays are filtered out the surface, so you only get very hard x-rays reaching you. So x-rays which can reach the film are going to reach the film. So x-rays which have got no chance of reaching the film are not used, they're discarded. So what in actual fact is that there's a uniform sort of layer of flesh, if you like. It's a layer of plastic in front of the x-ray machine, which shields you from the cancer-causing x-rays. So you get a very tiny dose of x-rays, and nowadays the x-ray machine is so brief, it doesn't need to be big, it doesn't need to be cooled, it's not a huge thing. And so I had to have this x-ray. I'm off to surgery in 2 days' time, and so the surgeon needs to look in at what's inside me. And so the x-ray showed my sternum from the side, showed my sternum with six rings of fencing wire. It looks like fencing wire. It's fine wire, two layers, and it's twisted off, much as you can twist off some fence, windlass fence, actually. Tighten it up by actually winding the wire around each other. So you can see that quite clearly. It's very high contrast because that's metal. So my actual valve itself is made out of carbon. Amazingly so, though people call it a metal valve because it looks, I suppose, a little bit metal, and when it's in its resin dome, the fact that it is this special material which repels the resin, it has this layer of air above it which makes it look silvery because of the total internal reflection, much like a bubble under the water seems silvery. Or I'm sure you've seen leaves or things in the bathtub which appear silvery, as it's bubble coated under this plastic display. So this little heart valve looks like it's got the size of a jar lid, not a big jar of jam, but this is these little sample jars of jam that you get in the Christmas hampers. So that's the overall size of it, and it, unlike a very clear thing of metal, it's because it's all carbon, it's a very gentle pitch. You can actually see, it's almost like a jellyfish seeing through it. So it's this little ring you see on the side. And what's special about this particular picture is that there are two flaps inside which are opened, the actual valves opened and letting blood flow. So it managed to capture, after all these photographs of the heart valve closed, this one actually caught it when it's open. So you can actually hear valves open and close in the heart, or close in the heart. They're closed with a thump. So the first thump you hear, and that thump thump, is the blood being charged into the pump of the heart. So there's a storage region of the heart. The blood builds up into that, and then this is pushed gently into your into the firing region of your heart, the thump. So when that goes in, there's that it goes in and closes off. And then the heart itself expands again, pushing up, closing the valve, and actually opening up the new valves, which push into the aorta. And we'll discuss this a little bit more. But when those valves close, you get the other thump. But in my case, because I've had a mechanical one, I go thump-ding. This high-pitched ting. It's actually, if you actually listen to it or record it, it's a high-pitched thing. So I go boom ting, boom ting. This little bell sound as these two panels open up. And don't worry about imagining it too much at this stage, because we'll get on to our next image that we're looking at. But the important thing is it's made out of carbon. Carbon is a low Z nuclei, it scatters X-rays due to its high density, but not due to its having calcium or any high atomic number nuclei in it. And so you see it, it's this beautiful glassy picture, almost a jewel inside you at the centre. So you see the heart and you can see this obvious man-made thing, and this X-ray which I have is captured at the moment of it being opened. The next picture I have is a butterfly, and the orientations is different, but you can see the butterfly wings, the two panels of the butterfly wings flutter. It's in half flutter, this picture, it's of some brilliant blue butterfly. But this is important because it's called a butterfly valve. The actual leaves of the butterfly valve, which are called, actually flutter in the blood wind. And when blood is being pushed past it, the wings go up, go and close together. And in this picture, they're just around 45 degrees. So in the process of opening, they open up fully. Blood flows through it, beautifully through it, even through the actual body section of it. If it was a butterfly, there's actually no body there. It's held around its disc. So it flows through the centre on the outside as it opens up. And then when the blood wants to go the opposite way, the actual little wings flatten down and actually seal off on this jam lid. So the image of the butterfly is there to help you imagine the actual motion of this valve. Now, the next image we have along here is of a B1 buzz bomb. And so this didn't go ding, it actually went bzzz. It actually opened and shut, pulsed. It's actually a pulse jet engine. So you have your heart is a pulse pump, and this is a pulse pump which flew this vengeance weapon. So in a world where there were big men, and I think you know it at the moment, there's lots of big powerful men that people like to do. Big powerful men like to feel hurt and extract punishment or vengeance. So these were a series of vengeance weapons. There are three vengeance weapons, V1, V2 and V3. V1 was a classic 1940s rocket, which was launched from around Holland, from Belgium, Ireland's in there, and these flew very high into the air and delivered a ton of explosive in a very defined region, and had a rocket engine of kerosene, I think, and oxygen. together and made a fairly powerful engine. And this was scaled up. Eventually, a very similar design of engine was scaled up for the Apollo moon missions. But these rockets were called V1 rockets. V2 rockets are similar to the modern day cruise missile, and it had the buzz, the pulse jet engine on the top. And I'll go quickly onto V3 and back to the V2 engine. So the V2 engine is something I'll talk about. I'll talk about quickly to round things off the V3. V3 was a very large cannon which could fire large shells across the English Channel and hit London. They were pretty interested in hitting London at this stage. And if I remember correctly, because it's coming back into my mind at the moment, had a shell, and the explosives chambers were off to the side in a series, a bit much, it's hard to describe, but like a Christmas tree with the shell going off, and then as the shell progressed along, more and more explosives would go off to accelerate it up. So you can imagine if you scaled up a gun so large, you'd need a very large explosive to start it off, very high pressure, and that would blow apart. So the Germans got around this by this long gun with multiple explosion chambers, which went off as the shell progressed along. Now, the problem with guns, as they become large, they wear out very quickly. So the problem with this is I think it may have fired one or two rounds, and then it has to be refurbished. But it's obviously very hard to defend against. And I suppose you can aim with it. But getting back to the V2, so Vengeance 2, the second grade, is a aircraft which basically pilotless aircraft which flew and as a kamikaze just went in, and so it created more destructive force than the V1 because it would actually slide in and create a much flatter, broader blast would actually level an entire London block at one. And I suppose, looking back on it, the British Defence, they said that they had a jet aircraft which could catch up with it, but they also developed proximity anti-aircraft rounds, which the American used, and actually basically used this proximity anti-aircraft round designed for the V1. The Americans used it very successfully in the Pacific theatre and basically wiped out the Japanese in almost single sitting with this new technology. A lot of this technology is not understood. We're getting back to the V1. The V1 obviously has a butterfly valve at the front rather than just one panel. I think it's got 10 little louvers which open. But we're considering this because it's got the same functional idea as my heart valve. So basically the V2 valve has been borrowed and put into my heart. And it's worthwhile actually going through the dynamics of the V2, and then we'll talk about it, how it applies to the human heart. So the V2 is basically a long tube, and one end of the tube is for the exhaust gas. It goes out the end of the tube. The opposite, the exit end of the tube, is the entry end of the tube. It has a small explosion chamber, and that explosion chamber has a wall with this louver valve, similar to my heart valve, with 10 louvers rather than two butterflies. And so the butterflies, the louvers open opposite directions. This all opened the one direction, and when the louver is shut, it created the buzzing sound, the click, and it happened so many times there's enough clicks that the clicks merged into a buzz. Now, I think again kerosene, which is basically jet fuel, was injected into the chamber, and the air which is blown into it ignited, this exploded, the explosion closed the valve, and the high pressure gas had nowhere to escape except by the exhaust. When this exhaust had finished, the levers would open with a little spring again, admitting more air. Now, to start this off, this plane would only operate at high speed to start off with, so they had to put it on a gigantic Shanghai with sling it up into the air. They also had to start it off with some oxygen. So to make oxygen available, they had hydrogen peroxide. This is water with an extra oxygen in it. They reacted that and it created copious oxygen to start off with, oxygen and steam, and this fired the rocket off and set it on its merry way. But the important thing here is that you have a pressure vessel. It explodes, the valve closes and closes off, and then the pressure vessel leads the high-pressure gas in one direction. Now, this, remarkably, is very similar to the design of the human heart. The actual explosion chamber is in a different position and a different orientation. But in the heart, the explosion, if you will, happens outside this long tube, pushes the blood in, and then the high-pressure blood, which has been pushed in rather than the air, the high-pressure blood has been pushed through the valve. It's there, the pressure goes away and the valve closes, leaving the high-pressure blood inside the tube. And this tube, if it was a rocket, would rocket out, but the actual tube is actually a rocket tube inside you. That's the aorta. This is actually a candy can-shaped tube the size of a garden hose, and it goes from your heart down into your belly. And it has the same function as the V2 rocket tube. And that is, there's a pulse, high-energy pulse inside it. The valve closes, and this tube then contracts and pushes out. So the pressure is from your heart, stored in the elastic energy of the walls of the aorta, which contracts slowly and then bleed that blood, almost as a rocket engine, through your entire body. So basically, if you just had the heart connected directly to your arteries, you'd blow apart, your eyes would blow apart. That pressure is such. So this damps out the pressure, but means that the pressure, the blood is delivered more or less continuously. You do have this spurt of blood. Obviously, the pressure is not complete, but that instant pulse is gone, and it's gone from more gentle bleed. So let's just review it so far before we get on to the Hubble Space Telescope. We've got the X-ray, which shows this jam lid size, small miniature jam lid, about an inch across. I've got a large one, and it shows the leaflet valves open. You've got the butterfly, which allows you to animate that by imagining a butterfly opening and closing. You imagine it, the butterfly wings go up as the blood rushes through, and then closes down as the blood tries to rush in the opposite direction. Then we have the V2 rocket, which takes that first image to the animation image to see how it works inside a system. And so we have the V2 rocket and the idea of the rocket engine bleeding out the exhaust, pushing forward. This means the aorta also bleeds, quite literally bleeds out the blood into the rest of the body in a uniform way. What's the pressure? Now we have the Space Hubble Telescope. Now, of course, all this type of stuff, the ability to think across multiple images and see patterns is what basic scientific training is. And, of course, scientists, when they do see all these patterns, have a problem communicating it. And so often when they talk to people, they will talk very quickly without taking the time that I'm taking this podcast. So we've got that limit. We're going up to the Hubble Space Telescope. There's a picture of that, and it has a optics cover, a lid. And so the 1986, the Hubble Space Telescope was taken up into space. And when it was deployed from the space shuttle, the lid, I think, only opened once and back, revealing the protected optics at the base of this large minibus size telescope. Pretty large. I think it's a 3 meter mirror at the end. And so this lid, for me, I automatically recognised it. This picture of my heart valve looked a bit like the Hubble Space Telescope. And to think that I have so much technology, the technology of the carbon valve. Incidentally, the carbon valve is coated with the material used on the re-entry cone of ballistic missiles, this new diamond-like carbon material. And this carbon material repels water, which gives it this metallic sheen when it's put in plastic to display it for people, those resin little snow domes, so to speak, or paperweights with these little heart valves. $4,000 they cost each. Getting back to the Hubble Space Telescope. So it's just only the image, the circle, the high technology, and the fact that there's this flap. Now, this flap's not on the inside. It does close as a valve. It does lock it off, but it's a single lid rather than a bi-leaflet valve. But there is a story which continues there. Now, I'm going to digress for a little bit. One of the things that used to be in Australian science education is training in the workshop. And these old codgers would tell you, old codger means an experienced engineer, would tell you how to put in the screw, how to assemble a piece of scientific equipment very quickly. And one of the things is that you know that screws, there's a term, a saying that we have here is clockwise is lockwise, except on dangerous gas. Okay, clockwise is lockwise. So if you turn a screw clockwise, so the screw points at 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and continues and goes in that sense, will screw up. But when you're putting a nut or a screw together, the important thing is to turn it anti-clockwise, and you carefully hold it in position anti-clockwise, and you turn it anti-clockwise till you hear a click. When you hear the click, the thread is ready to go. And so what happens is that you can, using this technique, assemble equipment very, very quickly. It tends to go on amazingly quickly. And then there's a series of things about how you tighten things up. You put it finger tight first everywhere and then retighten it and torque it up. But let's get back to it. This actually has a profound effect on the Hubble Space Telescope. The telescope had to be built on Earth first. And in 1986, when it was opened up, there was a calamity which opened up the space to all amateur astronomers, in actual fact. The telescope lens mirror at the back was misshapen. It led to a distortion, which meant that you could possibly buy a supermarket telescope, not really, which would give as good images. So the images were all distorted. So the idea is that the mirror collects all of the wavefront and of the light and concentrates it on a single point. Rather than concentrating on a single point, it concentrated on a rather complicated yucky sort of pattern, and if these yucky patterns are superimposed on each other, it's very hard to undo, to do the maths to get it to be undone. But nonetheless, NASA's first attempt at rectifying this calamity, this somehow the mirror was incorrectly positioned, is to discover software to undo this, and this filtered out on little floppy disks all around the world, which allowed astronomers to unscramble their yucky images and produce these fantastic images on Earth-based telescopes, which was a much comfort to NASA. And so they went back to discover what was the cause of it. And now, this is something which is unofficial. I was in Boston at an Optical Society of America conference, and I campled into the back of a dark lecture theatre to prepare my talk. This is back in probably 1987. Yeah, 1987, 88, I can't quite remember the year. And down there were about five, six scientists in the dark huddled over an overhead projector, and this is what I overheard. So this is not the truth. This is not an official thing. This is something I've overheard, and it can't be taken as gospel truth. But what happened is that the grinding relied on a beautiful feedback circuit. So the light was monitored, and if the light was in the wrong position, the grinding would go in a different direction. So if the light was not bent enough, it would grind more. If it was bent too much, it would grind everything else till it's the right position. And this thing had a this grinding feedback had a light position and a light positioner, a light receiver, and that had a cap which was put onto it, a gam lid, so to speak, and that had to be threaded onto the surface. Now, threaded onto this device. Now, this was cross-threaded, i.e., the person didn't go anti-clockwise, hear it click and lock it together. This person just went around till he could feel it and then pushed it. And this meant that this lid was on at a slight angle. And this at a slight angle meant this caught the light slightly differently and destroyed the surface of the image. Now, the surface of the mirror. So the mirror they put up in space was the wrong shape. Now, the answer to this was a spectacular piece of science, and I'm going to put another piece of folklore, which, I don't know that it is necessarily true or untrue. I suppose it was never going to tell anybody, so I don't know whether it's true or not. But what is true is that someone was having a shower and saw the mobile shower head and said, "Oh, look, I have an idea." And his idea was to put a monocle. And I believe the monocle was designed or fabricated in Germany. I may be right, it may be wrong. But this is interesting because there's pictures of Germans wearing monocles. And essentially they ground this big monocle, launched, put it in space, opened up the side of the space shuttle, put it in, opened up the sides of the Hubble, and put it into the Hubble Space Telescope, and then close the door on the side. You can open the door and put things in. Now, what I do understand is that this door didn't close properly, and they had to actually get a cable tie or a piece of wire to lock it together. And I don't know if that's true. I just heard that from someone who knew an astronaut involved in it. So, I don't know whether that's true. Now, the end result is that what it has there, the gyroscopes would then were in the Hubble. So the Hubble would move. So this bus, size bus, it's fairly light, can move within seconds around 90 degrees. It's this fantastic thing to observe. The actual people tend to show the Hubble just sitting there in space, but to actually see it point from point to point. And so it can actually point from one point to the other, and it doesn't rumble, it just moves from one point to the other. So you can imagine shooting at targets. This can actually just shoot at so many targets so quickly. It's an amazing thing to see. So this has repaired the Hubble Space Telescope. Now, this is where my story comes to an end. The same sort of thing has happened to me. My valve has been put in, but this stitching has come out. It hasn't stitched in properly. And they're going in this next operation as another mission to fix it up. They're not putting a monocle in. I think they're actually just replacing the valve and stitching it in a slightly different way, a bit more carefully. But there you go. There's a series of images that we've had, and the space telescope has just got a similarity to it, and it's got a story to it about science working very hard and identifying the problem and coming up with a solution. And people at the end will work out, well, there's a simple thing I didn't do right, which led to a long-term failure. So for me, there's a lot of blood going around the outside of my valve. So I'll have to go into it. So I'm just going to finish off walking back through the images again. The first image is this beautiful X-ray image that when I saw it, it was this beautiful thing. It's sort of like those images when you see a dolphin leaping out of the water. It was my valves, just the leaves were not at 90 degrees. They weren't closed as they are most of the time. They're at around 60 degrees, an amazing thing to see. The next image is that of a butterfly. And the butterfly, you can animate in your hand, and so then you can look back at the butterfly, little butterfly valve, and animate it yourself and see it in there. The image after that is the V2 rocket, which pulse jets and gives you the actual function of the valve inside my heart, and the fact that we do have a pulse jet engine inside you. It's that pulse jet engine, the jet engine inside you, is in actual fact the aortal tube, which is a large tube, pressure tube, which bleeds blood into your body quite literally. And it closes off with the image of the Hubble Space Telescope. And this is more conceptual thought of high technology. Similar images and a similar story of something small going wrong and a space mission going into deep space and fixing it. But in this case, I'll be going into an operating theatre, having an 8-hour operation to have it repaired. So overall, with my recovery, my aim is to produce some more interesting, well-structured podcast. And people have been listening to it. I think I've probably got about 70 podcasts out there as I'm just working away trying to improve things. And it's something that you get by practice. So this has been a podcast from the universe of explanations of Peter Hill Explains. That's what I have to do. My name's Peter Hill, and I have to be able to explain things as a teacher. And I will sign off to you by saying, in the meantime, keep on doing science.